Dave Engel inspired me a couple of weeks ago to maybe give another science lesson. And so for a short time this morning, I decided to give a lesson over what I'll be lecturing on this week in my college physics course at Urbandale. And a lot of times when we're talking about evidence of God and creation, we look on the grander scheme, the really big scheme, the expansion, the amazingness of the universe. And that's a good place to look for proof and evidence of God. But if we go down to the smaller things, sometimes we can also be very much amazed. And this looks like a scary topic, quantum dynamics. There is a lot of math and stuff involved in that, and I'm going to try to avoid all of that this morning. But quantum, we're going to water this down. Basically, it means the physics of the small. Things that we can't see with the naked eye, very small things, and what happens with the physics with some of those things. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about some of that this morning. I'm always a little reticent to do this. And I remember always I'd do some science lessons, and Audrey Brady would say, "I really enjoyed your lesson, but I didn't understand any of it." So, and I don't want people to not understand what we're trying to do here, but we're going to talk about some science. So what I think is some amazing science. I always enjoy this part of the year. At the end of the year, my senior's about ready to leave, and then I just kind of try to blow their mind with some quantum physics at the end, and hopefully maybe you'll enjoy it also. One of the most intriguing verses in the Bible to me, and probably because I have physics background and I enjoy physics, this might not be as impressive to you. I hope it is still impressive. Is Genesis 1 and 3. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And this is fascinating in many reasons. The first one is the first three words. That it was created by the word of God. God spoke something into existence. And this wasn't just anything. This was a substance, something called light. And if you have background in physics, you know that light is a fascinating thing. And it's a topic of study for many physicists on trying to figure out what exactly this substance that God created in the third verse in the Bible is and what it consists of. We also know that this verse, that this was what was created on the first day, right? We don't have a sun, moon, and the stars. So how do we have light? Well, we can have light without sun, moon, and the stars, right? I mean, at nighttime, you don't have the sun. And we could be in this building and we could still see because we can turn on the lights, right? So what does light come from? It doesn't necessarily have to always be coming from the sun or the moon or the stars. Light comes from the atom. So all matter we have is made of atoms, as Dave talked about a while ago. And light comes from that. So this is a really kind of a poor sketch of an atom. And atoms are really, you really couldn't draw what an atom looks like. We try to draw these representations to help us keep it straight in our mind, but I don't even know why there's different colored protons and neutrons in there or something. It's kind of a strange thing. But the particles that we have going around the nucleus of an atom we have are called electrons. Some of you might remember some of this. And if energy is provided to an atom, those electrons absorb that energy and they get excited and they jump up to a higher orbital, we could call it, or an excited energy level. And over time, that electron's always trying to get back down to the ground state, the ground level where it started from. And when it does that, when it falls back down, it has to give up that energy that it absorbed. I'm trying to really try to make this simple. I hope this is okay. Okay? But it releases that energy in a different form than what it absorbed it as. It releases it as light energy. And that's where light comes from. Light emanates from atoms. Atoms get excited with energy, so when God created light in the third verse, that's a really simplified way of saying that He created everything. He created matter, He created atoms, and provided energy to these atoms so that these electrons could go up and fall back down, and light could be emanated. We put electricity in the lights. That's the energy we provide to it. It excites electrons that go up, and those electrons fall back down, and you can see stuff. That's how light can be emanated from from the atoms. Now, the fascinating question, though, about light is, what is it? I mean, there's stuff that's coming down, it's hitting my hand, it's illuminating my hand, but what is this stuff that's coming down and hitting it? And even in this picture, I thought it was an interesting picture here, you can see that what they're showing is light being emanated here. There's a little kind of a gold ball there on the end, so they're saying, well, maybe it's like little particles that are coming down and hitting. Little particles of light. You've heard of the word photon. It kind of brings to the mind like an electron, proton, neutron, photon. It sounds like a little particle, little ball bearing of light that could come down. But you'll notice that they kind of hedged their bets here. Instead of just the little particle, they also drew a what? A wave, right? A wave. Because maybe it's waves that are coming down from light. And maybe it could be that also. There's two possibilities, so they kind of drew that picture that way. In physics, we only really study two things. If you really want to really boil it down, we study two things. For three quarters of the year this year, I talked about basically physics of particles, things, objects that you could drop off of a cliff, like a rock or a hammer or a cat, something like that. Particles is what that is. And we discuss the velocities of these particles. We discuss the momentum of these particles, how much energy these particles have as they're moving from one place to another. Particles and the way that they move. And for most of the entire year, that's what we talk about in physics. We call that Newtonian classical physics. Newton told us a lot about how particles move and transfer energy from one particle to another and things like that. And so maybe there's little particles of light that's what light is consisting of. Maybe that's a possibility. The last quarter of the year, we start talking about the other way that that objects or things could transfer and move. And that is with waves. And this is maybe the little harder part to think about, but we've all had experience with waves. I'm talking about literal waves, like in water. You know, it's one thing that ways that things can, energy can move through water. A particle isn't actually moving. It's actually energy that's moving through. The water just kind of goes up and down as the energy goes on through. And in this little animation here, we have little straight waves that we can make. And we can make these. If I had a little tank of water here, I could project it up here. I could take a little dowel rod and go like roll it back and forth, and you'd see little straight waves moving across the top. Very easy to do. You can generate it in your bathtub later if you'd like to make some waves. And if this straight wave goes through an opening, we have a little barrier here and a little opening. And if it goes through that little opening, it actually kind of starts over and makes circular waves, just like if I was kind of dabbing my finger up and down. This is the cool dab, all you high school peoples. I could dab my finger up and down and make concentric circular waves that would go out. Throw a rock in the pond next time you're out there, and you'll see this. These little waves going out. And if I goes through an opening there, it starts over, and you have these expanding waves go out there. And this is the kind of, and there's a lot of things we could talk about, how waves move as opposed to particles move. But this is a fundamental difference than particles. If I shot a whole bunch of particles at that opening, what would you see? Well, you'd see particles pretty much traveling in a straight line right down through here, right? But waves do something different. Waves go through the opening and I don't want to really use a lot of hard words, but they diffract. They bend and they fill in the entire space on the other side. There's two fundamentally different ways that things can move, particles or waves. And so for the 16th, pretty much 16th, 17th, and 19th, 18th century, there was just a big, huge debate. If you know anything about science history, there was a really big debate. A lot of scientists being really mad at other scientists about what this stuff is. What is this stuff that God created in the third verse of the Bible? What is it made of? Is it made of particles, little bundles, little particles that are coming down hitting my hand, or is it made of waves that are coming down? People felt like it had to be one or the other. We knew sound travels in waves. There's no little particles of sound. I'm speaking, I'm vibrating my vocal cords, those compressions are going through and they're going, hitting your eardrums, and that's registering in your brain as a sound, and you can understand that, and that's going out like this. Sound is waves. But if I throw baseballs out, those are particles, right? You wouldn't want me to probably do that. Okay? So there's a debate, and the debate primarily was between these two scientists, one of which you probably maybe haven't heard of, Christian Huygens. He was convinced in his mind that this stuff is waves traveling down like this. The other person, one of my personal heroes, is Isaac Newton. And Isaac Newton said, no, they are little particles that are coming down. That's what light is. Light is particles. Christian Huygens said waves. And the debate raged. And there were people that followed Huygens. There were the wave theorists, and there were people that followed Newton. Almost everyone followed Newton, because he's Newton. And they were particle theorists. And really, Newton won. He won the debate. There were lots of things, experiments that we could do with light. And if you did certain experiments, it really looked like it had to be explained by particles. And there were other experiments you could do, and it really looked like it had to be explained by waves. But generally, Newton could almost explain everything, with it being particles. And so he really won. A lot of people kind of became particle theorists and went with Newton. And, you know, I'll just kind of side note here. A lot of them went with Newton because he was Newton. You know, people talk about, well, there's no bias in science. That is not true. Scientists are human beings, and wherever you have human beings, you will have bias. That is just the way it is. And a lot of people followed Newton because generally things Newton said were correct. And I will give him that. Newton told us more things about the physical nature of this world than anybody. I mean, it is absolutely phenomenal. And not only that, he told us a lot of things about spiritual things too. If you want to know some things about Revelation, you could read his commentary. He had a lot of commentaries on the Bible also. He just was a strange person. How much wisdom and knowledge that he had, it's interesting. But anyway, those are the two possible things, and generally, people just rejected this idea of this being a wave, and that light was little particles that were coming down called photons of light. And one of the main reasons that Newton kind of won was because of this little concept of, this is kind of a thought experiment here. If we shine light at a barrier and there's two openings, like there's a wall back there, we'll say, and there's two doorways open up, okay? And I shine a whole bunch of light at it. What would you see on the back wall, the wall back behind it? Well, if light was particles, you would see two bands of light back on the back wall, wouldn't you? Does that make sense? If light was going through and light was particles, or if they pretend as I'm just like shooting a whole bunch of bullets at that back wall, you would see two bullet-laden paths on the back wall through that went through the doors, right? And that's what we see with light. If I had two doors back there and I shine a whole bunch of big, huge beam of light right back at that back wall, you would see two light things on the back wall there. You know, it would go right through. Now, that's particles, and I think that makes sense. But waves do something different. And this might be the hardest thing to try to explain. It looks really complicated. It's not. Just stay with me here. If I have waves going at these two openings on this thing, remember in that earlier picture, the waves start over and make concentric circular waves going out, right? And it's easy to see that when you had just one opening. It was very obvious. Now you have two openings, so that means you have concentric circular waves going out from each opening. Can you see that? Now what happens here, though, is waves are upward displacements called crests and downward displacements called troughs. And what's going to happen is these two waves are going to, you know, as they expand outwards, you're going to have a crest and a crest hitting each other. And they're going to interfere. And they're actually going to, whoop, build up. Like this. So two crests coming in are going to make a big crest. Two troughs coming in are going to make a big trough, right? Interactive part here. A crest and a trough coming in are going to do what? completely cancel each other out, and you're going to have a place in the water, if these are water waves, you're going to have a place in the water that's completely still. And you're going to have places, other places, that are going to be way up in the air or going way down, and you could be going up and down like this. So if I were to come out here on this place right here, and like, let's say that this is water waves, okay? I could, and we could do, you could do this if you want. You could be swimming out there along this line right here, okay? You'd be going along, and you could stop in certain places, and you would just be floating in the water and not moving up and down at all. But if I go a little further where you see a crest over another crest, in that place in the water, you're going way up and way down and way up and way down. You could swim a little farther and you'd find another spot where you could just sit there. And this is how waves interact going through two openings. It's called an interference pattern. And you'd see a whole bunch of places that are way up and way down, and there's a nice soft space here, and there's a way up and way down, and there's a dead space here. We call them nodes and anti-nodes, but that's more language. So if you ever want to do this, you go into the pool, take two like rubber balls and just go out there and just bounce them up and down in the water, and this is what you'll see. This is what the waves do. The waves go out and they interfere with each other, and you see the lines? Those lines right there are places where crests and troughs are canceling each other out, and it's very still. Okay? So if you, so that's water, but if this was sound, which sound is waves too, if this was sound, you could have two like speakers there on the side of a football field. Some the marching band people might have noticed this. You have two speakers on the side, and you march right down the middle of the field. What are you going to hear? You're going to be marching, and all of a sudden you're going to hear it really loud. Then you're going to march a little further, and you're going to hear it really soft, and you're going to march a little farther, and you're going to hear it really loud. It's the waves are interfering with each other and making these loud and soft regions. Well, what if it's light? Now you can put light through this thing, and you can have a backboard where you can project the light onto, and you won't see, if it was light and light was waves, only if light was waves, you wouldn't see two light things on the back wall. You would see a whole bunch of light bands on the back wall. Because it's waves, and they're going to be interfering instead. Okay? Here's another little animation. It's water, but we're kind of pretending it's light on that back wall there. So you see these waves going through there, and wherever they're interfering, crest going crest, it would make a light band on the back wall. So you'd see an interference pattern instead of two light bands. How are we doing? And I think I'm getting to the point where I'm starting to see people like... Radio waves is light. It's not sound. Radio waves is light. And so that might kind of get... Okay, all right, good. All right, excellent. Okay, so, we think light has to be either waves or particles. And, of course, when we shine light through these two openings in the back, we see two light bands in the back. So, for a long time, people said, see, light has to be particles because it doesn't do this. It doesn't do this. Okay. Until 1801, we have Thomas Young's double-slit experiment, which changed everything. It's like one of the premier experiments we talk about in physics. Thomas Young was a wave theorist. It's funny in science, it had been proven. Light was particles. That was it. You know, people don't want to give up on their scientific beliefs. You know, some of the scientists have way better faith than Christians do in their own faith. They get stuck on a theory and they want to stay with that theory even in the evidence of things that makes it seem like it's not. So Thomas Young was a believer that the light has to be waves. It can't be particles. It just has to be. And so, but it was a problem with this double slit thing because it doesn't show that you have an interference pattern. So Thomas Young started thinking about waves. He said, it's light. And he said, if light were waves, then it would probably have a really small wavelength, which means the distance from one crest to another crest. Really tiny wavelength. So he thought the problem, why we don't see it in this double slit experiment, is probably because it has something to do with the experiment. And so what he did was he made two openings, but he made them really small. Not doorways. He made them two little like slits in like aluminum foil. Two just tiny little slits with a knife. And he put them really close together. And he, really simple experiment to do. We call it a diffraction grating. I should have brought one in. I could have just put it up here and you would have seen that when light goes through those really small openings, what do you see? You see this. You don't see two little light bands on the back wall. You see a whole bunch of light bands. You see interference. And so Thomas Young said, aha, Newton was wrong. What light is not particles. It is actually waves. You just had to do the right experiment to show that it was acting like waves. This changed everything. I mean, this was just an amazing, I don't know how amazed you are, but it was an amazing, amazing thing that light now was waves, and pretty much most everyone believed that it was waves, except for the particle theorists who had staked their whole lives on it being particles, had a hard time giving that up. So they tried to start doing some experiments with this. And so they took some, what they thought, you know, in their whole life had been particles, something called electrons, right? And you know about electrons too, right? Electrons are particles, right? Aren't they little particles? We draw them as little dots going around in orbits. That's how we always draw them, isn't it? Right? They have to be particles. And so they took a whole bunch of electrons, a whole bunch of electron beam, and they shot it through this same little small slits that Thomas Young had sent the light through. They did electrons. They said, okay, well, let's send particles, things we know that are particles through it. And this is what they got. An interference pattern. The electrons must not be particles. They must be waves. How could this do this? We always think of electrons as like tiny little ball bearings. If I shoot a whole bunch of little ball bearings at those two openings, you should see two ball bearing spots on the back wall, right? But that's not what was happening when we shot electrons at this really small, two small openings. We saw an interference pattern. Now this was nuts and crazy, so what we decided to do was, okay, I mean, an electron can't be like coming out here, like turning into a wave and then interfering, right? It can't be doing both. So we're going to shoot one electron at a time. We're going to shoot one electron at these two slits, one at a time, and see what happens. And so they did this. These are some of the biggest experiments of all time in physics. And we shoot an electron through, and it hits this back screen, and we have technology that allows it to flash, and so you can know where it hits, okay? So we send an electron through, and there it is. All right, good. It's right there on the screen. It's a particle. There it is. Proven, it is particles. Well, we let it go for a long time, one electron at a time, one electron at a time. Next electron hits somewhere else. Next electron hits somewhere else. And eventually, over an hour or two of doing this, we see this, which is an interference pattern again, even though we sent one particle through at a time. How is this happening? How are these electrons doing this and acting like waves when we observe this over here? It's very, 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 very strange. So, we send even what we thought as particles at these two particles, and we see this interference pattern. How could this possibly be happening? Well, you know, electrons are the same charge, so they probably repel each other, so maybe they're all going and bouncing off of each other, and so they're making it look like they're waves, like they're an interference pattern on there or something. So, let's watch then. Let's see which of these two openings does the electron actually go through. Let's watch. Now, how are we going to watch? Because we can't see electrons, right? Well, we can, with technology, we can indirectly decide, and we can put recording devices, little photon or little electron sensors on each of these things right here. And we can, and it'll beep. It'll beep every time an electron goes through. Beep, 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 like this. Every time an electron goes through one or the other, and we'll know exactly which one it goes through. So we're going to put a little recorder right here by these openings to see how we're getting this interference pattern with these electrons. Okay? Ready for this? Ready for the results? Are you excited? So we put these recorders on these little openings here to see what we get. and we had beep, beep, beep through every single one, and we thought, okay, now we know exactly where, which hole every electron went through. And we looked at the screen, and what did we see? We saw the two bands. By us watching which hole the electron goes through, it decides, I don't know how electron decides, but it decides that it's now a particle again. And you get it just like you'd expect with two bullets going through the two openings. You'd expect to see two bands. Just by observing which hole it went through, it acted like a particle. It manifested itself as a particle. If we don't watch, it acts like a wave. It's not magic, it's physics. And it's very bizarre and strange, and God's probably there somewhere. But I'm telling you, and I know some of you, I think, are disbelieving and thinking, well, this is something just physics, they figured this out by now. No, this is bizarre. It's very, very bizarre. If you want electrons to act like a waves and show an interference pattern, don't watch which hole it goes through. That's literally what they would say. And in fact, we would do that. We'd say, okay, turn the recorders off. So we'd turn them off instantly, interference pattern on the wall. Turn the recorders back on, quick! Let's catch it. Turn it back on. Two bands. It's now a particle again. This is the weirdness of quantum. When you get down to the small level, what is this light? Well, now we say it's both. It has a dual nature to it. It's particles or it's waves, kind of depending on your experiment. Kind of depending if you're going to observe it or not. Depends on whether it's going to be a particle. If you choose to observe which opening the electron goes through, it will manifest itself as a particle. If you choose not to observe, it will show up as if it's like waves interfering with each other and making this interference pattern. So, in review, here's a light source. We shine light through these two openings here. If we turn on the detectors there and watch, we get two bands right behind there like we would expect. You'd normally see if things were particles. Here's a light source, exact same experiment, two openings. We're going to turn the observations off. We're going to refuse to look at the openings. We're just going to look at the screen, and we see an interference pattern. There are waves if you don't look. This is quantum weirdness. This is the way that electrons, not just electrons, even atoms, will do it. We've proven this with atoms, too. We can shoot a whole bunch of atoms at some two openings. And they will show an interference pattern like waves too, as long as you don't look which opening they went through. Romans 1, 19 through 20. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them. For the invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. What can we know about God by looking at some of these things in physics and science? We're without excuse. We have this His creation, and His creation is marvelous and wonderful and almost incomprehensible. And what can we learn from God about those things? And every time I lecture on this every year, and that's why I wanted to share it with you, I've always wanted to share this lesson with you, but I'm nervous about if we understand it or not. Every time I'm lecturing to the physics students, I'm always reminded that this is a lot like God. There's a dual nature of God. Can we see God as He is and live? How did God allow us to see Him and interact with Him? He came to the world through His Son, didn't He? And that was much more palatable for us. It was still amazing. We could see the amazing works of God, but He came, He lowered Himself and manifested Himself to us as a particle, really. As a particle. A person. A human. And we don't see maybe the full glory and aspect of God yet. Someday we hope to see Him. I'd like to read 1 John 1, 1 through 14. or not 1 John, John, chapter 1, verses 1 through 14. Talking about Jesus and God and how it's hard to separate them. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through Him all things were made. Without Him nothing was made that it has been made. In Him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness was not understood by it. There came a man who was sent from God. His name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all men might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to every man was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision, or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. There's a dual nature there, and he manifested himself in a certain way through his Son. Before Jesus, in the spiritual world, he was called the Word. And nothing was created without the Word of God. That's how everything came into being. And then the Word became flesh, and his name was Jesus. And we were able to see an aspect of God. Genesis 1:26, and God said, again, let us make man in our image after our likeness. Who is us, an hour? Who's God referring to? Well, in Genesis 1:1, it says God created the heavens and the earth. In Genesis, the second verse, it says that the Spirit of God hovered over the deep. And in Genesis 1:3, which is we started today with, it says, and God said. That's the Word. In the first three verses in the Bible, we have God, the Spirit of God, and the Word of God. We have the three. And when it says here that God said, let us make man in our image, that's what we're made in the image of, those three. We have those three parts within us. So you have a dual nature too. Don't just focus on what you are observing in this world. You are not just a particle. You are not just a thing here in this world that is going to die and cease to exist. There is another part of you that is hard to see. Right now, you're just observing it. So it looks like a particle. It looks like, that's what the world will tell you. The world will say, you're just a thing. You are a particle. We can describe your momentum and your velocity, but there's nothing else to you. That's short-sightedness. There is more to us. There is a spiritual nature to us that can live forever. And we better not be short-sighted on that. We better not just be lost in what we're observing day by day in our lives, our short lives. There's something bigger. And there's more that we need to see. What you are observing in this world is not the total reality. We need to have faith in the invisible things. Your soul, your God, and your eternal home. Those are invisible things to us right now. But someday we'll know. Someday we'll be able to see. Someday God will allow us to see what can happen. 1 John 3:1-2. Behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knows us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. We'll be able to see beyond what we see right now in this world. That we're just a simple particle that is going to expire from the world to be nothing. Just to go into nothingness. There's more to us because we're created in His image. And there's clearly more to Him. We're allowed to observe Him and see an aspect of Him through Jesus Christ. And we should have been without excuse when we saw Him. But how much more we're going to see when we see Jesus in His glory next to the Father. So this morning, we'd like you to remember this, that your life is so short. And what you're observing right now is not the full picture. Keep in mind, there is something more. That's what we're striving to. And if you will accept Jesus, be immersed and baptized into His name, have your sins washed away, this is what He wants. And you'll be able to see, you'll be able to have that feeling that Mike was talking about earlier, the load being lifted, and maybe have a little better glimpse of the true reality of what God is and what He has done for us. So we ask that you take care of this as we stand and sing the invitation song.